some aspects of black hole thermodynamics. And let me start by saying that, of course, this is all will be applied in the language of holography and idea safety correspondence, but this has had a pretty long history. And we will start by considering the usual Schwarzschild solution. So before going into idea Schwarzschild and more exotic solutions, so let's just talk about the usual Schwarzschild metric and just use the units with h bar and c equal to 1. The metric signature, the minus plus 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 in d dimensions. So we'll start with the line element in d dimensions. D is a function of r, dt squared plus dr squared over this fd plus r squared d omega squared d minus 2, where the function fd has this characteristic form, 1 minus r naught over r to power d minus 3. And d omega squared d minus 2 is a metric on the sphere as d minus 2 of a unit radius in your favorite coordinates, so usually some generalized spherical coordinates. So this metric is a solution of Einstein's equations, and you can check this explicitly. It is asymptotically flat. And of course, there are various definitions of asymptotic flatness, and in particular, there are some rigorous definitions. For our purposes, it's enough to notice that for large values of r, this function fd goes to 1, and therefore we recover Minkowski metric in d dimensions. We will not need any more rigorous definition of asymptotic flatness than that. So this parameter r naught, which appears in the metric, so of course, if d is equal to 4, then you recover the standard solution that you typically derive in GR courses for four-dimensional space-time, asymptotically flat. But in the dimension, so this parameter R naught can be related to the ADM mass. So the parameter R naught is related to the mass by the following expression that you can also compute using the standard ADM formalism, d minus 3 divided by 16 pi gd. Gd is a Newton constant. So here, omega d minus 2 is the surface area of a unit sphere in d minus 2 dimensions. Let me write this explicitly so that you have it for reference, divided by gamma function of d minus 1 over 2. So this is the surface area of a unit d minus two-dimensional sphere. And GD is the d-dimensional Newton constant. So this solution arises from the Einstein's equations, and the equations themselves follow from the gravitational action, which is typically written in this form. Here, let me include the cosmological constant lambda, root of minus g, dx. And in principle, there could be also some matter Lagrangian that we'll need in the future if we want to couple Maxwell field, for example, or scalar field, or some more exotic form fields to gravity, then we'll need the matter Lagrangian. So here, the relationship between this kappa d and gd is given by this formula. Lambda is a cosmological constant. So when you vary this section, you derive, and you probably know how to do this explicitly. So you derive equations that we will use many times in the course. We have a cosmological constant lambda equal to kappa squared d times t mu nu, where t mu nu is the energy momentum tensor of this matter part. And so this is a formal definition. And again, this is something that we will use when we derive various things, such as Kubo formulas and so on. We have the external fields, gravitational fields acting on your system, which is described by fluid dynamics and some external gravitational field. All right. So these are things that are known. You also had some exercise sessions that tell you that in principle you can write this. So quite often the equations of motion are written in the form r mu nu is equal to the right hand side, and this is typically done by tracing this equation. And if you so taking the trace of equations of motion, you find that the scalar curvature is related to the trace of t mu nu and lambda by the following expression, and then you get equations in the following form. R mu nu is equal to the right hand side. The right hand side contains effectively the matter fields, or things which these matter fields can be quite exotic. So in low energy string theory, of course, this t mu nu, so this right hand side will involve not only scalar field, but it will involve form fields and some number of them. And but this philosophy remains valid in that case as well. So you can compute the t mu nu not only of Maxwell field, but of any form field. And these equations of motion can always be written in this form. R mu nu is equal to the right hand side, and here you have also g mu nu, but then there is a 2 lambda over d minus 2. Now plus, of course, so plus, this is important, plus equations of motion of matter fields, right? So don't forget that there is a coupling. So once you once you deal with your system, your gravity coupled to matter, so your scalar, or Maxwell, or all of the above, then by varying this action, you derive equations of motion for gravity, which is this one, but you also derive equations of motion for all the matter fields, like Maxwell's equations and form fields equations and so on. All of them are coupled. We will see explicitly in low energy type 2B string theory how this system actually works. It's nonlinear, so these are partial differential equations, nonlinear coupled. This last word is very important, so don't forget that your matter fields are sitting inside this TMNUs, so they depend on this phi or Maxwell field and so on. And in principle, you have to solve the coupled system of equations in order to determine, for example, your metric. Sometimes you can make various approximations if you're able to justify them. You can make various approximations in which you determine the metric by ignoring, for example, fluctuations of the background fields, or some of the background fields can be some of the matter fields can be set to zero. If you can do self consistently, then they decouple and you have only equations for the metric, and so on. So reflect on this a little bit in this innocent setting without any explicit reference to string theory fields. And because this will be ultimately the playground of the actual gauge gravity duality. What we will be doing is we'll be considering fluctuations of a metric and fluctuations of other fields, and matter fields, and equations of motion for these fluctuations will follow from equations of motion, so these equations of motion effectively. And you have to understand how to do this correctly, right? So it's a reflection on that. Now, another exercise that I think you did yesterday was the elementary dimensional analysis. That tells you that your G mu, so the metric G mu, is dimensionless, right? Because the line element, so you compute something which is measured in meters squared, for example, and this is G mu dx mu dx mu. So if you measure your axis in meters, then you must have G mu dimensionless. Then other objects such as Riemann, for example, right, mu nu lambda rho. So this will be proportional to derivatives of Christoffel's and then the products of Christoffel's. So schematically it will be something like that. So Christoffel, of course, will contain the derivative of the metric. So this is 1 over length. Now here we have derivative of Christoffel, so this means 1 over length squared, or product of two Christoffels, that's the same. And therefore, so gamma, our gamma, alpha, beta, gamma has a dimension of 1 over length. Everything else, such as Riemann, will be 1 over L squared. And everything else that follows with raising indices with dimensionless metric will, of course, remain of the same scaling with length. So things like the Ricci tensor or Ricci scalar and so on, all of them scale as 1 over length squared in any dimension. In any dimension. So then this simple analysis tells you that, okay, the action, so since the action is supposed to be dimensionless in units, right? So since the action is dimensionless, I remind you that h bar and c are equal to 1, then it follows that kappa squared d, this coupling constant here, right? Because this is dimensionless, right? So this stuff is 1 over len squared. So this is L to the d, right? And in order to have a dimensionless action, we must conclude that kappa squared d scales with length as d as L to power d minus 2. And kappa squared d, which I remind you was 8 pi g Newton, is therefore something proportional to the Planck length to power d minus 2 dimensional analysis. So more precisely, we will need sometimes more precise relationship between these quantities. And so let me write somewhere aside that kappa squared d is equal to, so this is, if you want, this is just notation, nothing beyond that. But but the second expression, so L Planck, so d minus 2, so the g d h bar over c cube. You can play with these for some time, and so exact relation. So c, so let me refer you to this book by Zwiebach. All the exact references are in your online, right? In this list that I prepared. So you can read there how to relate these things more precisely. But the dimensional analysis, I think, it's clear that this should be the connection should be like this.
Why should kappa go like the Planck length squared and refer to the d minus 2 and not some other length scale that we're unaware of?
Because L Planck happens to be a fundamental length scale which involves gravity and which involves Newton's constant h bar and c. Right? There is no a priori reason why this should be L Planck. And not, for example, you can take the radius of the orbit of Jupiter as this fundamental length, but as you probably know, so these Planck units have a fundamental meaning because they were constructed in such a way, right? That so you can, philosophy was that you have various fundamental constants such as h bar, c, and g, and you want to construct the quantities which have dimension of time, length, and so on, right? So combining all these, so if you are talking about, let's say, quantum gravity, that is supposed to be combining Newtonian Newton's constant and then h bar, right? And so that's why it is proportional, right? So, but again, so you can introduce your favorite length scale, and so far this statement is just a statement that this thing will be proportional to length to power d minus 2, right? But it is convenient to take the length scale which appears to play a fundamental role. It's similar to like other scales play a fundamental role, or scales in energy or scales of length play a fundamental role in other theories such as QCD, for example, right? So you have this scale lambda QCD and so on. So each physical theory has its own scale, and usually the scale manifests itself in the concrete calculations. So you can think of computing the spectra, for example, in spectra of hydrogen atom in quantum mechanics, and you will see that quantities such as the Bohr radius, they appear naturally, and they do characterize the scale of atomic physics. So that's why. So L Planck naturally appears as a characteristic of the quantum gravitational physics. So that's why it plays this special role. Now, the trivial remark, perhaps, but some people are not do not appreciate it completely. So the solution, right? So this d-dimensional Schwarzschild solution that we start with satisfies equations R mu is equal to zero. We're talking about a solution with zero cosmological constant. And so this implies, of course, R equal to zero, but of course, Riemann is not equal to zero, right? This is not a flat space-time. So one thing that perhaps you know very well, but I want to emphasize this nonetheless, because sometimes it seems that people do not really appreciate it completely. When we write, so we will work with metric, with line element and with metric all the time. But the metric is a tensor, it's a second rank tensor. And as a tensor, it transforms from frame to frame, right, or from coordinate system to coordinate system. And therefore, this is an object which is elusive in some sense, right? So this is, it is helpful, it is important. We can compute various things with given metric. But from a point of view of having something which is an invariant, right, which doesn't really change when you change the coordinate system, you change your language, that is probably not the most convenient object to work with. So so this statement, right, so is a kind of manifestation of it, right? So Schwarzschild solution has quantities like R, for example, R mu equal to zero. Of course, the metric obviously is not flat. You compute components of the Riemann tensor, and you see that they are not equal to zero. Now, this metric is an event horizon at R equal to R naught. And you probably know very well from GR courses that this singularity of the metric, so this is related to what I just said, right? So this is an apparent singularity of the metric that can be removed by doing the coordinate transformation and taking your metric as a second rank tensor, going into some G mu prime, which depends now on X prime, which will not have this singularity. And the singularities that we will have to take into account are singularities such as R equals zero. So the true singularity is at R equals zero. And you can check whether or not the singularity is true by computing various curvature invariants. Such as the Kretschmann invariant, but there are more. So the Kretschmann is just the Riemann-Riemann. Lambda sigma. And so for d equals 4 asymptotically flat Schwarzschild, the computation that you can do by hand or with Mathematica tells you that k is equal to 12 r naught squared over r to the 6. So therefore, it blows up for r going to 0, but is completely finite and happy at r equal to r naught. Right, so of course it must go as length at r equal to r naught as length to the fourth by dimensional analysis. Now, in any d k at r naught will have to be proportional to 1 over r naught to the fourth. And if you want to compute, if you want to compare, for example, this to, if you want to compare how big, for example, this quantity is, you have to compare this quantity to a certain length scale where your description of space-time in terms of the metric will be modified. So this is going back to your question. So this story, of course, is the story of the classical general relativity. When I write down the action in this form, what is omitted here is the sequence of corrections that arise from various processes or various description of gravity at smaller scale, and in particular at a scale which is close to L Planck. These are high derivative terms that appear naturally in, for example, string theory description. But even if you don't want to involve string theory, they will appear inevitably under this principle of quantum democracy that if you have you write down your action, you forgot some terms which are allowed by the symmetry of a particular theory, then even if you don't write them explicitly, they will appear once you start computing quantum corrections, right? So this is kind of a quantum democracy principle. So you do expect corrections coming here. And in fact, there is an infinite sequence of them, corrections of the type R mu, and all infinite tail of things which are allowed by the symmetry. And then the analysis similar to this one would tell you that, yes, this whole tail here in principle exists, but the coefficients, because you have this r into lambda, they scale with length as 1 over L squared. Once you start adding these things, then these things will have different dimension, right? So this one will go as 1 over length to the fourth. And if you have more and more powers of these quantities, they will be scaling with L as 1 over L to higher powers. So this means that coefficients in front of these, so for example, you add this with coefficient alpha 1, so the coefficients in front of these things must be dimension full in order to balance the full dimension of the action. And this means that these coefficients, so these terms will be effectively suppressed by the powers of L Planck over L, where L is the standard scale of the problem that you are considering. So you can think of how would you estimate. So for example, I know that there are some results for the precession of the perihelion of the orbit, right? So or motion of planets, right? In principle, you may ask, can I detect the presence of quantum gravity in such effects by measuring with high precision the quantities in the solar system, for example, or maybe in a lab, but you don't go to any microscopic scale. You have some observations in the solar system. And can I measure the presence of these coefficients and therefore confirm if this coefficient is really the one which string theory predicts, or perhaps it's a different one, right? So it would be wonderful, of course, to do that. All these terms will be suppressed by the ratios of L Planck to L, where capital L is the typical scale of a problem. Typical scale meaning, for example, the Schwarzschild radius, right, if you are talking, or the radius of Jupiter or Mercury, right? So that's a typical scale. Of course, the ratio of L Planck to the scale is effectively infinitesimally small. It's an extremely small number. So that's why you do not expect. So of course, your equations of motion will be modified by these terms, naturally. In fact, it's a very interesting thing. We will talk about higher derivative corrections in the context of holography, because in the context of holography, the higher derivative terms will translate into corrections on the dual gauge theory side of the coupling constant to the coupling constant corrections to your results. So ADS CFT will compute in the ultimate limit sort of infinite coupling on the gauge theory side. It will compute with the help of the Einstein-Hilbert action, things which, like viscosity and so on, which are values of these gauge theory coefficients at infinite coupling. And of course, you expect corrections to them once the coupling is not infinite, but it is large but finite. And high derivative terms will be precisely the ones that will compute those corrections. So we'll need to analyze them in detail. Right. So okay. So here. You compute, yeah. So before that, okay. Let me add. Yeah. So I'll come back to that. But what I wanted to say is the following. So the metric. So remember that G mu nu is a tensor, and therefore other coordinate system. Could be more convenient in describing what is happening with your physical system containing, for example, a black hole or a star, mostly black hole because the horizon is a troublesome thing with the singularity. So such as the popular one, for example, Kruskal-Zekers. And Eddington Finkelstein. We might encounter, I'm not sure if we go any deeper into Kruskal-Zekers and Penrose diagrams and all that probably won't need it. Although, again, in the context of finite temperature ADS CFT, you actually formulate your real-time finite temperature quantum field theory. The dual to that will involve the Penrose diagram in the so-called Schwinger-Keldysh formalism. So that will be necessary. I'm not sure if we get that far, but just be aware of that. But for things like fluid gravity duality, using the Eddington-Finkelstein coordinates is a very convenient thing. So just keep in mind that this will appear inevitably if you go deeper into holography. Now, in addition to, so one other remark is that in addition, and here is an exercise for you, in addition to K, there are many more curvature invariants. In fact, infinitely more. But so let's consider. So consider the ones. Consider those without covariant derivatives, because you can also. Derivatives. Now the exercise shows, so count them, right? So exercise. So in D equals 4, there are 14. In D equals 5, this is the most important for holography, there are 40. And in general dimension, there are d, d minus 1, d minus 2, d plus 3 over 12. So exercise, right, count. Now let's go back to this. So as I said, that in any dimension, by dimension analysis, if you have some solution which involves some horizon, and the horizon is characterized is at R equal to R naught, whatever this R naught is, then in any dimension, you will have K proportional with some coefficients here to 1 over R naught to the fourth, and at the horizon. So at R at the horizon. So then, if you want to determine whether or not your metric is still adequately describes the space-time around the horizon, then you need to compare this expression to the appropriate one involving the L Planck. So this means that K of R naught, which is 1 over R naught to the fourth, it's better be much less than 1 over L Planck to the fourth. And this translates into the statement that mass of this our solution is much greater than 1 over L Planck, which we can call M Planck, right? So in terms of mass or energy rather than length. So this would mean that the region the near horizon region is still adequately safely described by classical gravity, right, to Einstein-Hilbert action. Einstein-Hilbert action. And this is an example of a check of the validity of the gravitational solution. It is an important ingredient in the holographic dictionary. So what you'll be doing shortly is finding the solutions of low energy string theory equations of motion, which will be equations of gravity coupled to various metra fields. And from time to time, you would happily find some metric. And then this metric will be your gravitational dual to a particular boundary theory at strong coupling. Every time you do this, you need to keep an eye on two things. One of them is that your equations of motion should be correctly solved, including the equations for fluctuations here. The second thing is checking the validity of your gravitational solution. Here we have a very simple situation in which we have only one parameter, which is R naught, characterizing the solution. Once we obtain the solution, we compute the curvature invariance, and we check that those curvature invariants are such that your appropriate scales, right, the scaled appropriately with the Planck length, they are such that you can still safely apply classical gravity. In other words, that you don't need to include in your in your action there, you don't have to include any, for example, higher derivative corrections or any quantum corrections or anything like that. Your solution does not go beyond the validity of the original action and the original equations of motion. This is very important in gauge string duality. In fact, one of the basic statements, basic entries in ADS CFT is precisely, will follow precisely from the inequality like this one, right? So we don't want, because once you have your length scales R or R naught, for example, of the order of N Planck, it means that this action has to be supplemented by higher derivative pieces and perhaps quantum pieces as well, right? If it is not, like here, this is a condition for our mass, its parameter mass or R naught. If this is greater, this is much greater than L Planck, we are safe, okay? To use classical gravity. All right, very good. So now let's compute something else. So what we want to do is to write down the laws of black hole thermodynamics, and then compare them with the usual laws of statistical physics. For that, we will need the Hawking temperature. And so again, in this example of the metric that I wrote there, so in the near horizon region, of that metric, we have Fd of R expanded as Fd prime of R naught, R minus R naught plus R minus R naught squared, where Fd prime R naught is D minus 3 over R naught. Now, one way to compute a Hawking temperature that you also had this exercise session to do that. So you make a weak rotation to Euclidean time. Euclidean time tau is to minus I tau. And change coordinates. Change coordinates so that you replace dr squared over f prime d of r naught r minus r naught. So you call this thing d rho squared. And the metric becomes ds squared d is d rho squared. So this is the equation that tells you explicitly how rho depends on r. But we are interested in the metric. So this is how it will look like, pi squared plus dot, 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 where pi is f prime d r naught over 2 times tau. So making phi periodic with a period 2 pi. So this means that d squared d is completely regular. Because this is nothing but the polar coordinates. And so these are polar coordinates. And otherwise, you have a conical singularity. So tau changes from 0 to 4 pi over f prime d of R naught in this particular, for this particular metric. Now, in Euclidean path integral formulation, making tau periodic with a period beta, so making tau periodic with period beta, which is 1 over kT, or 1 over temperature, corresponds to computing a partition function in the canonical ensemble. Namely, so when you write down the path integral, so this is the amplitude that you write, slightly, maybe schematically, phi over e to the is in Minkowski. And this is the amplitude, phi 2, e to the minus I h, where h is your Hamiltonian, t2 minus t1, and on phi 1. But what you really want to compute is the, so that's just the path integral. What you actually want to compute at finite temperature is the partition function, which is trace e to the minus beta h. And so this object can compute trace of e to the minus beta h if you have identification t2 minus t1 is minus I beta, and your fields in the path integral are periodic, phi 1 of tau 1 with a period beta. All right, so so there is a story behind this, which we will probably touch later, because you can also think what happens when you have a non-zero chemical potential, but we'll talk about this a little bit later. So from for our purposes, now it's enough to identify beta with this parameter f prime, and therefore or the Hawking temperature on kT is f prime d for this particular case of this metric 4 pi. So we will need this in the future. So d minus 3 over 4 pi r naught. Okay. So stop. Okay. Now the usual, so for d equal 4, we recover the usual expressions for the Hawking temperature that probably seen many times. So this is nothing but 8 pi g m, again in d equals 4. A reminder that R naught is equals 1 is 2 g m. In d equals 4. So that's the Hawking temperature. Now we also need horizon area. And horizon area is computed in the standard way from the metric. So what you need to do is, and you know, make sure it's not terribly complicated computation, make sure that you understand how to do it, right? So here is a metric. It could be more complicated. So in in ADS CFT, there will be some metric which will involve many more parameters, typically. So it will be slightly more unpleasant. And this one, what you do is you compute the volume element and volume, meaning n-dimensional volume element, by computing the object of this type, because this is the invariant measure, where G is the determinant of the induced metric on your element whose volume you want to compute. So if this is the area, that means that the induced metric simply is derived from what is written there by taking T to be constant and R to be constant. And then whatever is left is your induced metric. You compute the determinant of this metric, take the square root, and integrate over the angles in this case. And that will give you the expression for the horizon area. But you can also think of computing various exotic things like lengths of geodesics or any other curves in this metric. So there is some machinery, just not very, well, identical probably to what is written here. Now, so this computation, so in D dimensions, this computation will give you, so do this as an exercise. So in D dimensions, this computation just gives you R naught to power D minus 2, and then the same omega has already appeared somewhere on the board of a unit D minus 2 dimensional sphere. So if we introduce Bekenstein-Hawking entropy by this expression, so far without any additional thoughts, so then for d-dimensional Schwarzschild, this expression is R naught d minus 2 omega d minus 2 divided over 4 g d. And in particular, so for d equals 4, right, we have this expression for temperature. There are very simple formulas. Or here, for example, right, d equals 4, they appear here. So for d equals 4, s is simply 4 pi g, sorry, this g4, right, so let's just keep g without any index, times m squared. But the temperature is given by this thing, right, so then and the temperature is 1 over 8 pi g times m. And from these two expressions, we observe that dm, and of course the energy is E is equal to mc squared, so you can think that this is the energy, but dm is equal to T ds. And this is manifestation. So check for arbitrary d. But this is the result that tells us that we have properties of our black hole solutions which resemble in principle the usual laws of thermodynamics. This is not an accident, although to this day, I think it's fair to say that the complete understanding of why this is so is probably lacking, although it's a significant progress on the issue, in particular in strings. So the exercise that I just asked you to do will tell you that more generically, you have dm d minus 3 over 16 pi g d r naught times dA. And so this can be written as so dm is equal to d minus 3 over 4 pi r naught d of a over 4 gd, and then that resembles this dE is equal to t ds in the usual thermodynamics with the ingredients of thermodynamics, the temperature is equal to d minus 3 over 4 pi r naught hc over k Boltzmann. So for once, let me restore all the units, c cube. Okay. People should remember that h bar is not really equal to 1. And this is quite enigmatic. This is quite enigmatic. Now we can also recall also that the L Planck has this relationship to GD, and therefore I can write down S as K Boltzmann times the d-dimensional area of the horizon divided by L Planck to the power d minus 2. So sometimes this is presented in this form. So as it should be, so the entropy S divided by KB must be dimensionless. And indeed, you can see that the horizon area is normalized by Planck to the appropriate power. So it is actually dimensionless. Okay. So more generally, you have four laws of black hole mechanics. So this is one of them. Of course, given here is just an illustration as an example, but more generally, so you have these gentlemen who formulated them. So in let's think of four dimensions first. And in d equals 4, if you have a stationary and asymptotically flat black hole, then it is uniquely characterized by these parameters: mass, angular momentum, and charge. And of course, recently there has been an interesting development that there are exceptions from that. So there are some exotic examples. So there are exotic examples, exotic exceptions in four dimensions, and less exotic in higher dimensions. This is a big area that I will not go into. But still, even those exotic, I mean, less exotic, but still not completely generic, shall I say. So this resembles this unique characterization, or almost unique, apart from these exotic exceptions, which should be explained in this language as well. This characterization reminds us, so this is similar. Similar to the situation with thermodynamic equilibrium. And the situation with thermodynamic equilibrium which will be of our primary concern, right? So what we are going to do next within the holography, once we have the holographic dictionary, is the following. We will have our finite temperature system in thermal equilibrium. You know that the thermal equilibrium is characterized by the set of global conserved charges. And then we will take this system and perturb it. We'll take it out of equilibrium slightly, and then more and more strongly, as much as we can develop a formalism to describe the strong deviation from equilibrium. But the system which characterized the thermal system, thermodynamic system, characterized by these global conserved charges in the grand canonical, in microcanonical ensemble, right? So you have a number of conserved charges. Qi, energy, is one of them. And then you build this formalism by taking the canonical ensemble with the walls, maybe I shouldn't write here. So in the microcanonical ensemble, you have this collection of conserved charges, Qi. Then you build your either canonical ensemble or the grand canonical ensemble in which your system can actually talk to this big system by exchanging energy, and energy will be, this exchange of energy will be controlled by inverse temperature beta, or exchange other conserved, other quantities which are globally conserved, such as, for example, the electric charge or some other charge, and this exchange is controlled by the number of chemical potentials. So this situation will be described by the black hole physics due to these observations, which in principle have nothing to do with thermodynamics. They have something to do with gravity. And then the next step will be to take the system out of equilibrium and see if we can find the analog of these laws. So the black hole mechanics can be translated into the language of black hole of thermodynamics, but that was known in the 70s. But it's not the end of the story, because also the deviations out of equilibrium of your black hole and of the dual system, which involves field theory and thermal equilibrium, are also related into one-to-one correspondence. And you can write down quantitative formulas of how precisely this description works. So we will continue tomorrow with some elements of string theory, which will be necessary to build the gauge gravity duality. Oh, yeah.
So if I introduce the entropy like this, it seems that equations resemble the equations of thermodynamics. However, why are we calling this entropy? Is there any like more rigorous definition of it in terms of microstate or in terms of fundamental degrees of freedom of my system?
Yes, that's a fundamental question. Of course, if we literally believe that this entropy there is not just a formal symbol, but it actually has something to do with microscopic states, then we must identify those microscopic states and count them. That has been achieved. So that was a primary. In fact, the answer to this question was the underlying reason for emergence of ADS-CFT correspondence, in a sense. Because people in the beginning of 1990s or mid-1990s they were counting the microscopic states of black holes. We'll talk about this tomorrow a little bit. And in particular, was this famous example of the Strominger-Waffa counting of the microstates of the specific black hole which existed in string theory. So this is exotic black hole, but it's a model example where you can actually count the microstates. And the counting gave precisely, as in statistical physics, it gave precisely the formula which is Bekenstein-Hawking. So that's why people were so much inspired by these events. So yes, indeed. So this is. But I must say that, and of course there is a huge kind of line of development on this. But if you ask me, can we take a Schwarzschild, like asymptotically flat usual Schwarzschild solution, right? And it also has the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy and so on. And if you ask me, you know, give me the proof that this is count some microstate of something, right? And that exists. Right? So it is an open and very important problem.